So yes, I would like to talk about the rigidity of periodic frameworks, and the particular approach I'll be taking to this topic is to look at these graphs as finite graphs on a torus. But first of all, maybe I'll just say a few words about what periodic frameworks are. So this is an example of a periodic structure. So you can see, I hope you can see, that if I kind of deform it here, it's moving in a periodic fashion. So I think I'll just pass this around for your enjoyment. And so the motivation in part for the study of periodic frameworks, I know there are a lot of people here who've thought a lot about periodic frameworks, but the motivation in part comes from the study of zeolites. And perhaps the chemist, Patrick, can correct me, but as I understand it, zeolites have this very particular molecular structure that's characterized by this kind of porous pattern. So they get used as a kind of molecular sieve in a number of different applications. So there's been a lot of interest in trying to figure out the rigidity properties of these structures, and Simon had some very beautiful other pictures of zeolite as well. So mathematically, we can think about these things as a system of corner-sharing desyntheses, or corner-sharing triangles in two-space, a corner-sharing tetrahedra in three. And this picture here is the so-called Kagome lattice, and you can see that the pink box defines a kind of fundamental region or unit cell, and this is a deformation of that one. So I actually have a little movie here, which is, again, the Kagome lattice. So this is a bar joint framework, which will be the topic of today's talk. Okay, so the basic problem that I'm interested in thinking about is when is an infinite periodic framework rigid so that its parts cannot be moved periodically with respect to one another? So that's a point that I want to emphasize there, is that we're thinking about motions that preserve the periodicity of the structure. So the periodicity is forced, and I'm looking at motions of this thing that preserve the periodicity. So there would be motions of this infinite periodic framework that might break the periodicity, but I'm interested in those that preserve it. So there have been a lot of different contributors to this topic, and I think actually perhaps almost all of these people are here in this room today. So I won't go through this list in detail. But to suffice it to say that there's been a lot of interest in periodic frameworks. And
also Whiteley 79.
Wasn't aware of that one. Yeah, and there are actually other people. I know Brigida and Herman have thought some about periodic frameworks as well. So as an outline of today's talk, I'll be talking about periodic frameworks as finite graphs on a torus. And to do this, I'll be using the language of gain graphs. And the thing that I'll be focusing on today is frameworks on a fixed torus. So there have been a lot of, let's see, what do I mean? I mean that the fixed torus, this gray box here, will remain fixed over time. So that's an additional constraint, I suppose, on the problem. And there have been people who've looked at the flexible torus, and we'll be hearing much more about that later in the week. So I'll be looking exclusively today at frameworks on a fixed torus. I'll talk in two dimensions about the Henneberg type results and a Lehmann type result. And I'll also talk for n dimensions, I'll mention some necessary conditions for rigidity here. So some of you might be kind of snoozing through this part because you may have heard it before, but the n dimensional stuff should be new. Okay, so as I said, I want to talk about gain graphs, or I want to talk about these periodic frameworks using the language of gain graphs. And so a gain graph, also known as a voltage graph, is a directed multigraph together with an assignment of labels to the edges, where the edges are labeled invertibly by the elements of a group. So in fact, gain graphs in general, it can be any group you like. I think that's true anyway. But the group that I'm interested in is the integer lattice. And the reason for this, you will soon see. Here's my example in two dimensions. And we can use this to define this related graph I'm going to call the derived graph, where the vertices and the edges are indexed by the elements of that group. And the edges are determined by the gains. So let's see, all of the edges you see here that are labeled with zeros correspond to edges that are lie completely within this box here. And the edges that are labeled by something without a zero, say this this edge connecting vertex 3 to vertex 1, you can see that that connects the sort of orange vertex to the green vertex in the 1-0 adjacent position, if you like. So this finite labeled multigraph is a kind of recipe for this infinite periodic graph that we're actually interested in. Okay, so roughly speaking, a periodic framework is an infinite graph with periodic structure. So its automorphism group contains the integer lattice or something isomorphic to it. And moreover, it's placed periodic in a periodic way in space. A periodic orbit framework is what I'll be talking about today. And this is going to be this gain graph I just mentioned, together with a map of the vertices of that graph onto the torus. So here I'm using a subscript 0 to denote the fact that the torus is again fixed. So this in turn can be used to define this infinite periodic thing. And in fact, you can show that every periodic framework can be represented in this fashion. So every periodic framework can be represented as this orbit framework, this gain graph on a torus. And in that case, it actually doesn't matter whether you're talking about a fixed torus or a flexible torus, that's always the case. Okay, so as I said, I'll be using the fixed torus, meaning that the size and the shape of the torus is fixed. It does not change dimension. Now, an infinitesimal motion of a periodic orbit framework on the torus is kind of, I think, what you would expect. It's just basically the infinitesimal, their usual infinitesimal motion relationship there, but here we have incorporated these gains. So that kind of encodes the periodicity in some way. So in other words, this is an assignment of infinitesimal velocities to the vertices of the framework in such a way that preserves the lengths of the framework. Now, there's always going to be a d-dimensional space of trivial motions, which is depicted here. So in two dimensions, this will be the two-dimensional space of translations. And so we say that an infinitesimal motion is trivial if it corresponds to a translation of the framework on the torus. But this here would be a non-trivial motion. And we say that the periodic orbit framework is infinitesimally rigid on the fixed torus if the only infinitesimal motions are actually trivial ones. So I should probably point out here that in some discussions of periodic rigidity, rotation is considered a trivial motion. And in this particular conception, it isn't. And it's basically because we're fixing the representation of the torus. Okay, so from that definition, we can define the periodic rigidity matrix, which looks a lot like the finite rigidity matrix, except again, we're incorporating these gains. And the periodic orbit framework will be infinitesimally rigid on the fixed torus if and only if the rank of this matrix is exactly equal to dV minus d. So this is not too surprising because, as I mentioned, there's always a d-dimensional space of trivial motions. So the kernel always contains at least those d elements. Now, I'm going to say that a framework is minimally rigid if it's both infinitesimally rigid and independent. And by independent, I mean the rows of the rigidity matrix are linearly independent. So we can think about this periodic Maxwell rule that I guess Walter probably first recorded. So if the framework is minimally rigid on the fixed torus, then E is exactly equal to dV minus d. So that's the kind of minimal rigidity case, and that's what I'll be talking about for the remainder of this talk. And without saying too much about generic frameworks, I will be focusing on generic rigidity. And the essential point here is that the rigidity properties of a generic framework are properties of the periodic orbit graph and not the configuration. So you just need to define generic appropriately for the periodic setting. Okay, so I want to say a few words now about some inductive constructions. And I wanted to revisit some of this material because there's been some recent discussions about inductive constructions and how we might use them to characterize rigidity on the flexible torus. And so inductive constructions were the tool that I used to do all the work for the fixed torus, but it turns out they're maybe a little bit trickier to extend to the flexible torus, although there's some hope that that might actually be working. So periodic inductive constructions are graph theoretic moves that preserve generic rigidity. So there are two of them, essentially. There's a periodic vertex addition. So if we imagine that this big circular area is an infinitesimally rigid framework, I can add a two-valent vertex to this and preserve generic infinitesimal rigidity. And so this is, to emphasize, this is on the gain graph. So this is on that finite labeled graph. And actually, there are a few ways of doing this, because remember, we're looking at a multigraph. So we can do it, the one in the center here is kind of like the typical Henneberg inductive construction. But this one over here is a little different. And the only thing we need to make sure of here is that the gains on the two edges are different. So we're not adding the same edge twice, effectively. And similarly, we can do a periodic edge split, where we add a three-valent vertex and delete an edge while preserving the gain on the deleted edge. So if this, again, is my infinitesimally rigid framework, and here's some edge with some gain on the edge, I can do an edge split of that edge as long as I maintain this relationship that the gains I put on here sum up to the original gain. And again, I can do this in two ways depending on how the incidence works. So just to emphasize, I guess, these moves are really local moves in the sense that if we look at what's happening in this infinite graph, not just the finite gain graph, they look like regular Henneberg moves if you're familiar with those. So it's easy enough to show that these inductive constructions will work for some choice of gains, but it's a little bit, the moves that I just talked about are deterministic in the sense that they are given a certain gain, here's exactly what to do. So just to look at that in a bit of detail, here's the vertex addition, and so again, this is on the torus. We can imagine this, if we imagine this as a fundamental region for a tiling, you can imagine that filling the plane, and then you're adding this two-valent vertex to each cell of this infinite framework. And so here's the other version of that, and in this case, because I have a labeled edge now, it kind of wraps around the torus in some way. And similarly for the edge splits, maybe not the best example because it started with a zero gain, but this is like a regular Henneberg move, and as is this one. Okay, so from here we can talk about the periodic Henneberg theorem, which actually characterizes all infinitesimally rigid frameworks on the fixed torus. And it says that any infinitesimally rigid, minimally rigid, actually, framework on the fixed torus can be constructed from a single vertex by a series of these periodic vertex additions and edge splits. So the basic observation here is that the single vertex, just one vertex, is actually rigid on the fixed torus. And from there, we just add a two-valent vertex using our inductive constructions, and we can build up as large a framework as we like. So here's an example of just a two-vertex graph, and the picture on the torus, and then the infinite picture. So you're chuckling. This is rigid. It is indeed rigid. I know it doesn't look rigid, but But again, remember, this is a fixed torus, so perhaps this is an illustration of why the fixed torus is a little weird. So next I want to briefly talk about the periodic Le Mans theorem. And basically the goal there is to characterize the generic rigidity of these periodic orbit graphs. So here's an example. This one is a rigid, infinitesimally rigid framework. But this one, it's the same graph, different labels. This one is not. This one is infinitesimally flexible. And you can see here there's essentially like a little rotation on that subgraph with those four green vertices. So that is actually a subgraph with six edges, four vertices. It's a 2V minus 2 subgraph. But there are no gains on that subgraph, or more precisely, there's no non-trivial cycles on the subgraph. So I'm going to say that a gain assignment is constructive if every subgraph that is maximally counted, so every 2V minus 2 subgraph, contains some cycle with non-trivial net gain. So I just mean that there's, as in this first example, if I go from vertex 1 to vertex 2, vertex 3, and back to vertex 1, I get a cycle with net gain 1, 0. So that's what I mean by a non-trivial net gain. Then from that, we get the periodic Le Mans theorem, which states that a periodic orbit framework is generically minimally rigid on the fixed torus if and only if it satisfies this sparsity condition here, and the gain assignment is constructive. So, the proof of this is by induction. It essentially just amounts to showing that you can always delete a 2 or 3 valent vertex in such a way that preserves the hypotheses of the theorem, which is not too difficult, but it is kind of lengthy. And I also wanted to mention that this theorem leads naturally to an algorithm which is based on the pebble game. So the essential idea of the algorithm is to actually play the 2V minus 3 and the 2V minus 2 pebble games at once, and from there you can get something that checks this condition. So the other part of the proof that I wanted to talk a little bit about is something that I've been calling the T-gain procedure, which is actually from something in the book of Gross and Tucker on topological graph theory. I think they probably would have called it the T-voltage procedure. But it's a tool to identify a fundamental system of cycles in your gain graph. So, and the key theorem, which is proved in my thesis, is that this procedure preserves the rank of the rigidity matrix. So it's essentially just a way of, if you're given a gain graph like this one, we can pick a tree in the graph, and then we can wiggle the gains off the tree so that all of the non-tree edges here and here are, they're perhaps labeled with non-zero gains, but the point is that whenever we add one of these edges to this tree, the tree edges have zero gains, and therefore they tell you exactly what the gains on all the cycles, the gains on a fundamental system of cycles would be. So if you like, you can think about the cycle space of a graph as the vector space generated by all the cycles in a graph. And then you could think about the gain space as the vector space generated by the gains on those cycles. So what's kind of interesting about this is the graph corresponding to, this is the torus graph corresponding to this orbit graph. And here's the graph corresponding to the result of this T-gain procedure. And what's nice about it is that it's not like an affine transformation or anything, but there is a graph isomorphism, and moreover, the graphs are homotopic. So this is essentially just a technique for preserving the homotopy type of a graph, and it's nice because it preserves the rigidity. So this is a tool that came up quite a bit in the proof of the periodic Le Mans theorem. But the you need to choose different representatives. So, yeah, that's right. What's So it's actually kind of hard to visualize. I think if you fix this vertex and you imagine grabbing this pair of vertices from down here and kind of pulling them up and sending these two up, you end up with that picture. So they're homotopy equivalent. You're just sort of pulling them from pulling different representatives up. Yeah. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about briefly is some necessary conditions for d-dimensional rigidity on the fixed torus. So here's the result. If we have a minimally rigid periodic orbit framework on the fixed torus, then first of all, this is the periodic Maxwell, E is equal to dv minus d, and for all subsets of edges, we have this kind of elaborate-looking sparsity condition. Now, so first of all, if you ignore this part in blue here, first of all, what remains, this is not really working, what remains here is just your regular d-dimensional Maxwell rule for finite rigidity. So what's going on here is this quantity here is the dimension of the gain space of that cycle. So you can think about it as, the cycles in this subset will all have certain gains, and we're basically taking the rank of that collection of gains. So how many independent cycles are there? So that's what this quantity is. So this is essentially just saying that the higher the dimension of that gain space, then the more edges we can add. And I guess I also want to point out that I say subsets here, even though subgraphs is technically correct, because we're so used to thinking about induced subgraphs, and this is not necessarily induced subgraphs. Okay, so this is actually kind of similar to what Lewis and Justin did for the flexible torus, in that they have this kind of graded sparsity condition. So you have the same thing on this for d-dimensional rigidity. Unfortunately, this is not sufficient. I mean, we can't hope this to be sufficient because we have regular finite rigidity kind of completely contained within this problem. So here's everyone's favorite double banana example. But if we add these three extra edges, we obtain something that satisfies the conditions of this theorem, but it's certainly not rigid. We just have essentially all these copies of the double bananas connected together in a periodic way. So very briefly, I'll mention something about bar body frameworks. So the finite bar body frameworks, here is my two-dimensional case, which is probably the least interesting, but it's the easiest to draw. So for the two-dimensional case, the count is 3v minus 3. Here is the kind of graph schematic of the bar body framework, and then here's what it actually might look like. So we have these rigid bodies that are connected together with edges. And in the periodic case, for two dimensions, we allow ourselves one more edge. And again, we're talking about gain graphs, so they'll be labeled multigraphs. And here's the schematic, the picture on the torus here. So the reason I mention this is because that necessary condition for d-dimensional rigidity transfers essentially directly over to the bar body case. So you don't need to think too much about this, except that it's essentially exactly what I just talked about for bar joint frameworks. But there is some hope here that this might actually be sufficient due to the fact that we completely understand the bar body case. So I'll just conclude with a few open or other questions. So there's been some interest, I'll just mention that there's been some interest in periodic frameworks with extra symmetry. So in joint work with Bernd Schultz and Walter Whiteley, we found some necessary conditions for periodic frameworks for a number of different symmetry groups in two and three dimensions on both the fixed and flexible tori. And also Lewis and Justin have also found some sufficient conditions for periodic frameworks with some extra symmetry, and I know one of you will be talking about that perhaps tomorrow. And so as I mentioned, there's been some interest in thinking about inductive characterizations of frameworks on the partially or fully flexible torus. So that's another sort of thing that people are working on. Here's just a kind of random list of other questions. So global rigidity, what about big finite pieces of periodic frameworks, and finally there's this question of scaling. So I'll leave it there.